BetRivers Sportsbook is offering new customers a deposit match up to $250 when you sign up today. In addition to their welcome bonus, BetRivers has daily and ongoing promotions that can provide extra value. Download the BetRivers app or go to BetRivers.com today to sign up. Must be 21. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. And 1-800-522-4700 in Nevada. Another Madden Monday podcast. Tim Benz and Mark Madden. As always, brought to you by BetRivers. Download the app today or go to BetRivers.com. Read Mark in the Trib 4 times a week and check him out on 105.9 The X Monday through Friday, 3 until 6. And Mark, you're in the casino, at Rivers Casino, over the weekend, actually on Friday. And I'm curious, did you get anybody talking to you, coming up and speaking with you about the gambling action on the Steelers? What do you think about some of the preseason lines, like the over-under at 7.5 for the Steelers?
Well, Tim, I don't give a rat's ass about none of that because I'm betting soccer. I've made 3 soccer bets. I'm down exactly $56.50. I went 1 for 3. The only bet I hit was Arsenal to win on the road against Crystal Palace in the EPL opener on Friday afternoon, Friday night in England, 3 o'clock our time. So Liverpool, I had a parlay of Salah to score, Liverpool to win. I got Salah to score and Liverpool to somehow tie Fulham. So far, so bad. Now I remember why I don't bet sports. But that over-under of 7.5, I mean, that strikes me as one I probably just won't bet, just like I didn't bet last year. I think they nailed it. I don't see a weakness leaning either way, do you?
I don't. You know, I think that number is right on. I think that they probably win 8 games. But I could easily see them winning 6 because the quarterback situation is bad. 6 or 7 the season. Yeah, they were right around the number, just about on it last year, too, when they ended up winning 9 games and going, 9-7-1. So it's always, with the Steelers, you think, Mark, it's essentially right around 9-10 wins. I know it's a 17-game season now, and that bakes it up a little bit, but it's always tough to call the over-under on them because that's just usually where they are.
Yeah, and I don't think this year will be any exception, but I have a way of tempering my annual prediction that I think applies here. This year, I would say they're an 8-win team, but I'd bet on them to win 6 before I'd bet on them to win 10.
And that's probably where your money should lie if you do make the prediction and you do put the money down. If you're feeling like it could go bad in one direction or the other, which one is more likely? And I do think it's what you said. Like, I don't see, especially after what we've noticed in camp so far, it's not going to be an instant hit with Mitch Trubisky. There's going to be a learning curve there for him, for sure.
Well, yeah, the quarterback situation is extremely interesting because I don't know what they do in the exhibition games, which, of course, start this Saturday when they host Seattle at Acrisure Stadium. Pickett just isn't close to being ready. In fact, Tim, I'm told he might not be ready to play exhibitions yet. That's how shaky they feel he's looked in camp. And then Rudolph's familiar with the offense, so I expect him to continue to look better than anybody else. But the point is, in these exhibition games, and not least the first one, Trubisky needs reps. If you made me predict right now what the division of duty will be in the exhibition game on Saturday, the first preseason game, I'd say Trubisky and Rudolph each play half, and Pickett maybe gets a series.
And when it comes to getting reps, he's barely gotten any reps with the likes of Claypool, Freiermuth, Deontay Johnson, and Najee Harris, because those guys, either through contract situations or injuries, haven't been available. And that's a huge caveat when we analyze how Trubisky's been playing, but it's not a caveat when we talk about the learning curve and the adjustment for him running a new offense if those guys are supposed to be on the field.
Well, that's right. That's why they have to concentrate on getting him reps if, indeed, as we all suspect, he's the preordained starter for week 1. Although, I've been on my show, Tim, and of course this is gaining no momentum because the great unwashed here in Pittsburgh have long since decided they don't like Mason Rudolph. But he's having the best camp. He has the most experience in the offense. I know that you want your quarterback in week one to be the guy you're counting on to start all season, but why is that? What would be wrong with starting Rudolph the first game, maybe the first couple, while Trubisky catches up on the learning curve, and you find out about Rudolph in, well, you know he can play a little. He's 5-4-1 since he joined the Steelers, but in a season where every win figures to count, why wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't you stagger the way things are normally approached to try to eke out an extra win somewhere?
Why? I think the answer to that is it would be them admitting that they screwed up twice in acquiring Trubisky and drafting Pickett for this year. Or at least that's how
they,
it would look.
Yeah, but they might have.
You're asking me why, and I think my answer to your why is that, because they'd be afraid of admitting it.
Well, no, but the mistake would have been doing both. Okay, if they thought they were going to draft Pickett, they should have just stuck with Rudolph as the transition guy. If they signed Trubisky, then they shouldn't have drafted Pickett. It should have been one or the other.
Because they do seem to have their hearts set on Trubisky, even through the first parts of training camp when they came out with their league-mandated depth chart. They put Trubisky as one and Rudolph as two. So that's what they want it to be. You know, that's unfortunately a message that Mason Rudolph has to take. You know, I heard you talk about this on your show. I mean, even though he hasn't been a very good quarterback, you do kind of feel sorry for him with the way things have gone down around here.
Well, Tim, I feel bad for Rudolph because the citizens don't like him because he looked weak and scared in the fight with Garrett. He looked weak and scared when he got his face mask cut off after Baltimore concussed him. But he really hasn't played that horribly. He's been okay. And I think he would have been an okay transition guy while Pickett gets ready. I'm worried about Pickett, though. I have gotten no reports. I mean, Tim, you've been there. You tell me. All the people I talked to have been there saying he looks way behind. Way behind. Not that he is going to be terrible forever. Not that he can't be their quarterback for the long term when the long term gets here. But, like, way behind is in no chance of playing this year.
From what I saw up until this week, it wasn't even functional. Like, you couldn't tell what the offense was supposed to be doing. And I don't know if that was mainly him, all because of him, circumstances beyond him. I think this past week, later in the week, after he got some reps with the twos, and it looked like the second team offense was ahead of the second team defense, even when Rudolph was in there, he looked like he at least belonged. But largely, your reports that you're getting, especially for the first few weeks, I would agree with.
Well, like I said, I hear they hesitate to even play him in the first exhibition. That could change this week.
Yeah, and I think that might have a lot to do with the third-string offensive line, because that's apparently just not functional. I mean, these are third-string Steelers defensive linemen they're going up against, and they're getting housed on a regular basis.
Well, yeah, Tim, but when we talk about, well, you know, Trubisky, this guy's been hurt, that guy's been hurt, and when you talk about Pickett, well, you know, he's playing with the threes, but it's always something with both of them. I want to hear excuses why things are going right, not why they're going wrong.
Here's what I've heard about Pickett that is a little surprising to me, that his issues, from what I had been told, weren't about him getting the verbiage out of his mouth, getting the team in and out of the huddle. It's not the knowledge of the playbook or the offense. It's he's having a very difficult time dealing with the speed of the game and not putting much air under the ball when he throws deep, and knowing how quickly the ball has to come out and the quickness of the reads, all those things that we thought he would be ahead of the curve on than the average quarterback, he is not. And his quote-unquote high-end skill, we all knew, wasn't all that high, even for a first-round quarterback. It was the how ready is he to play now stuff that we had been so sold on, and that apparently is not there.
Yeah, to be fair, did they sell us on that, or did we sell ourselves?
No, I mean, I have quotes. You know, I went back and went through the press conference after he was drafted, and it was a lot of maturity. It was a lot of, he's 24, he's battle-tested in the ACC, that will help him in terms of the competition this year. And I went back and kind of with a different lens now, looked at what was said by Kevin Colbert and Mike Tomlin, and it was almost like they, at that point, either hadn't made up their mind yet about Trubisky, or they were trying to fool us into thinking that they hadn't made their mind up about Trubisky, but, you know, they were selling the competition angle and maybe Pickett could start, and that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, maybe shame on us for believing it. A kid who was the best quarterback of a bad draft bunch, still dropped to number 20 overall nonetheless. Another quarterback didn't get picked till the third round. And I still think, Tim, the Steelers would not have drafted Pickett had he not felt they were overly familiar with him because he played at Pitt.
Mark Madden with us. What'd you think of the Deontay Johnson contract?
I think it's fair to team and player. It's like I wrote in the Trib. He got number one receiver money almost, which is fitting because he's a number one receiver almost. He's Pertner, but not Plum. He got 18 some odd million on average annual value of the extension. That's about right. I give both sides credit for getting it done. And I think Omar Khan has done a pretty good job as general manager. Not that I would have signed everybody. I wouldn't have signed Deontay at all. But considering that apparently they're – I don't know who decided they wanted to do it, Tim. I think when you sign a guy like that, you're giving your current team more credit for being in contention for something than they should be doing. But I thought it was good value. I think it's a decent deal.
One thing that I noted when I wrote about this for the Trib was that if they are going to commit $18 million to him over the next 2 years after this one, when the extension kicks in, they're pretty good years to do that because, like, what are the Steelers going to do? Sign a $15 million tackle, a $15 million corner? They just don't do that. They put money towards keeping their own, and they don't have a lot of their own coming up. So I think they had a comfort zone to do this when otherwise they wouldn't. Plus, the cap is going to go up even more. So I think it was a sweet spot for Johnson, if he really wanted to stay here, to at least soak that money out of the Steelers.
Yeah, what you said. I'm just not sure that, again, within the context of the team they have now, considering wide receivers are extremely replaceable within the context of the league, and especially considering that the Steelers have always had an easy time replacing receivers, I just wouldn't have signed them at all. I'm not angry that they did. I'm just telling you what I would not have done, and that's it.
I got you, and I think maybe what they're thinking is, well, we know he's good. This is not the kind of money that is the going rate for receivers. Let's give him this. We know ourselves. We're not signing somebody else's tackle or corner. Maybe we'll draft those guys for a change high this year.
Yeah, I would have done it this year.
Yeah.
Getting back to Pickett.
Yeah, right, exactly. I know they're...
But they seem so sold on the tackles, especially Dan Moore, don't they?
They do, and actually Dan Moore looks a little bigger, seems a lot more confident. He might actually be better this year, Mark, than Chooks is, and they're paying Chooks a lot to be Chooks.
I would hope somebody's better than Chooks is, and that contract, at least they can get out of that after 1 year, so it's not like a lifetime commitment to Chooks. Or even past this year. I hesitate to commit to Chooks for any appreciable length of time. But it might be okay. It's just, again, Tim, like I've said, since they started signing who they signed to these big money deals, I consider the most important positions in football to be, in some order, well, cornerback, obviously, number one, then cornerback, left tackle, and edge rusher. And the Steelers are spending almost no money on any of those positions except for T.J. Watt at edge rusher.
How do you think things are going in Cleveland right now? The latest is Kareem Hunt wants a trade.
Well, I mean, he did a hold-in for a couple days, I saw. Tim, he's got to get a grip. It takes more than a couple days to do a hold-in. I mean, look down the Turnpike 79, whatever it is, whatever route you take. And, you know, if you do it here, it works. I did a column about that. The hold-in always works. But, Cleveland's just I'm beginning to think. Who's the owners up there, the husband and wife?
The Haslams.
Yeah, I'm beginning to think that they're just incompetent boobs and a lot of bad flows down from that, like excrement always does.
You know, I was looking at some quotes that came out from Cleveland. Wyatt Teller sort of intimated in a quote that they're getting itchy knowing or not knowing what the situation is with Watson about how long he's going to be out. You know, I saw Jake Trotter on ESPN Radio had said something to the effect that the team is starting to get a little antsy about the length of time and what the offense is going to look like if it's Jacoby Brissett for, you know, 12 games as opposed to six. That's a big difference. Like, you know,
hey, they made their bed, though. They had to know this could happen, although I think they were counting on between six and eight, and I don't think they thought the NFL would take a stand against its own new disciplinary system, which is exactly what they're doing.
Their schedule, too, is so bad at first, they might actually be able to stay afloat and, you know, get out of that six-game pack like 3-3 or 2-4. That's how bad their schedule is.
Yeah, and I think they're a good team. I mean, I think on paper they're really good. I think on paper they're clearly better than the Steelers, don't you?
This is how I would line up the AFC. If I were to bet on exact order of finish in the AFC North, I would bet on the Bengals to win it, especially because the Ravens are actually technically the favorite. I would take the Ravens second, then the Steelers, then the Browns. You would go with the Steelers in fourth, is that right?
It depends on the suspension. If it stays at six games, I would go with the Steelers in fourth, yes.
I think last time I saw, the Steelers were at minus 155 to be in the exact order of finish in fourth place. So that's definitely what most people think, even with the suspension being nebulous and minimum of six games for Watson.
Don't go by me, Tim. I bet on Liverpool to win and Salah to score.
Hey, by the way, the Salah thing. Like, so if I'm betting soccer and I bet on a player that's as good as Salah to score, like, what's my comeback? What's the payback usually for a really good player to score?
Well, I had Gabriel Jesus to score as a standalone.
Yeah.
For Arsenal on Friday. I bet 50 to win 130.
Okay.
Now Jesus is not as good as Salah, but I'll give an example. I don't know what the exact odds for Salah were, but the Liverpool was a heavy, heavy favorite against Fulham, which of course makes the result all that more great. But I bet Liverpool to win, Salah to score, and I got even money. Well, 50 to win 51.
Mark, I saw something you tweeted that I agree with about the Pirates Hall of Fame. And 19 guys are going in and 16 of them are dead.
Yeah. Why would you do that? Why on earth would you do that?
Like, you know, I'm as big of a fan as anybody when it comes to the history of the Pirates and the Wehner brothers and Max Carey and all that. But
Tim, they named a guy to their first class named Jake Beckley, who died in 1918.
Yeah, so he could wait until 2023 to get in. You know who literally might not be able to? Dick Groat.
Dick Groat's 91. He's a former MVP. He was on a Pirate World Championship team.
And name them when it means more. Name them what, because they're trying to do, you know, they're trying to make it easy is what they did. Oh, okay, you're in the Hall of Fame already, so we'll just do everybody who's in the
Hall
of Fame.
Which is what the Steelers did.
Yeah, so they're kind of mimicking
that.
But
the Steelers effed it up, too. I you know, the Steelers didn't eff it up this bad, but they effed it up. But yeah, three guys of the 19 are alive. Here's another weird one, Tim. They named four Negro League players, okay, which I get.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't name Satchel Paige. Satchel Paige is the greatest Negro League pitcher ever, and he pitched in Pittsburgh. If you're doing this just to name the quote-unquote best guys, which seems to be the intent, you got to pick Satchel Paige.
And what about Barry Bonds?
Well, you can save him for later when maybe, you know, he and the city or he and the club have kissed and made up. That he should definitely be in it if you're naming the best players, but that does not outrage me.
Yeah, and I guess you do want to save a couple big ticket items here and there as time goes along, and you can save Bonds for a while. But, you know, I don't know how kissed.
Who was in charge of this, do you know?
I don't know who was in, like, the voting, how they voted. I don't know. I don't know what the voting process was.
I don't know who organized it.
I believe Jim Tredinich is the guy who's the chairman of the Hall of Fame. If that's what you're asking.
Yeah, that explains a lot.
I understand the design for wanting to have like a big ticket guy down the line, but Bonds, I don't know when Bonds and the team are ever going to kiss and make up any more than what they already have. Like, and as the years go by, I think it turns into a how come Barry isn't in yet? How come Barry isn't in yet? And then he gets honked off about it, maybe makes it worse.
Yeah, it's kind of like James Harrison not being in it. You'd figure he'd be in it by now, which leads me to think that there is some friction between Harrison and the club over the way he exited and the stuff he did with Antonio Brown as well. Well, again, I think 16 dead out of 19 inducted speaks for itself. And not too oddly, because they're all dead.
Mark, got a big concert week coming up, don't you?
Yeah, I got Motley, Def Leppard, don't forget Poison with Bret Michaels, who's stealing the show, Butler's Own, on the stadium tour, Joan Jett opening up. I think there's even a fifth band. And then that's Friday. Then Sunday, there's Greta Van Fleet opening for Metallica, both those two shows, the Motley Stadium show and Metallica are at PNC Park. And then Monday night, Jason Bonham's Led Zeppelin Experience out in Greensburg at the Palace Station. And Tim, that concert was only announced this week. You know, they booked it on 2 weeks' notice, which was odd, but I'm going to go.
I saw that, and it's been publicized and wallpapered everywhere because I think they're trying to get people in. And I don't know why that was so quickly spun around. It was like a replacement date, or was that a return date when they canceled something maybe because of COVID?
No,
what?
No, they didn't cancel. They were at the Palace not horribly long ago, inside of a year, I think.
What'd you think of Foreigner?
Tim, it didn't feel like the first time. No, you know, for the first time in my life, I'm thinking some of these heritage bands should hang it up. I saw Foreigner with no original members. Mick Jones wasn't there. He plays with them only sporadically. I saw Skinner in Atlantic City last month. Gary Rossington, the lone original member, came out for the last two songs. That was it. Whitesnake canceled their North American tour because David Coverdale can't get rid of his upper respiratory infection. Steven Tyler can't get rid of cocaine. Who knows when Aerosmith will play again. And Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys, I saw him a couple of weeks back at Star Lake. He had to be led to his piano with a walker by two people. Maybe it's just time to stop. And when you contrast that with Greta Van Fleet, who are all 25 or younger, and how energetic they are, that kind of drives the point home even more.
Well, after 16 of 19 dead people are going into the Pirates Hall of Fame at PNC Park, maybe it's fitting that these concerts are at PNC Park.
Well, yeah, but I'm not sure the ushers will know how to deal with the crowd.
Well, that's going to start with Billy Joel on Thursday. I'm not going to see that one. I saw him the last time at PNC, and I was underwhelmed. I'm not going to this one.
I bet he's good, though. Although, like I said, Tim, maybe that comes under the heading I'm talking about, where these guys, they should just quit.
No, I'm with you. And, you know, I feel like a lot of these last tours are sort of like, you know, the last, what would you say, 20 to 25 games of Ben Roethlisberger's career.
Well, the most striking example when I first started to kind of catch on to this is like, it's since the pandemic abated, so maybe 2 years ago, We were going to concerts two summers ago, right?
Yeah, because I was going to Black Crowes, right, yes.
Yeah, two summers ago. I saw Greta Van Fleet, maybe it was in Cleveland. I don't know, when were they at A&E? This it all runs together when you're old like me, but I saw Greta Van Fleet. And then, like, 4 days later, I went to Atlantic City and on consecutive nights saw Kiss and Journey. And I was like, somebody move.
Mark Madden, you can listen to him on 105.9 The X, Monday through Friday, 3 until 6, or even 4 times a week in Trib Live. And check him out weekly here on the Madden Monday podcast brought to you by BetRivers. Download the app today or go to BetRivers.com.